CoOptimus.com presents the CoOptiCast.
And welcome back to another CoOptiCast. This is CoOptiCast episode number 22. Whoa, getting ahead of myself. For Sunday, June 28th, 2009. And Mike and I are here tonight to bring you the latest co-op news, reviews, views, and other oohs. So, Mike, how you doing this evening?
I'm doing pretty good. How are you?
I'm doing well. Thanks for asking. So, what have you been playing, Mike?
It's been kind of an odd week. I haven't had too much gaming time, but I've been playing the hell out of Shin Megami Tensei Devil Survivor for the DS, which is, you know, if you know what the Mega Ten games are, it's the latest one. It's a strategy RPG, and it's absolutely awesome. So if you like strategy games, please go out and buy it, because the world needs more Mega Ten. I've also been playing Tiger Woods PGA Tour 10, because I'm not a sports gamer, but I love video golf. I don't know why, but you put Tiger Woods in front of me, or if I go to a bar and see a Golden Tee machine, you're guaranteed I'm going to, you know, spend a lot of time on that. I also, much to my dismay, played some Dynasty Warriors Gundam 2 with Jason, and that's a whole box of fail, but you can have you can hear about it in his upcoming review. And last but not least, I have been playing a little bit of the Trine demo, and man, is that game beautiful.
Yeah, it's gorgeous.
Yeah.
Yeah, I've been playing that as well, and I was pleasantly surprised with just the way it starts, that you often intros the characters and kind of has like this whole fairy tale thing going on for it.
Yeah, the thing I didn't expect was the narration. I thought that was brilliant.
Right, yeah, it totally surprised me. Like, it added so much to the game, so much character to it, and I was like, wow, this is cool. And then all the characters are pretty unique and feel just different enough.
The womanizing wizard was my favorite so far.
yeah, so it's good stuff. Definitely recommend you check that out. It's a PC demo right now. And it's supposed to come out in July for the PC and PlayStation Network.
Yeah, and you can play it with a 360 controller on the PC, so you can kind of feel how the console version will play.
Yep, if you check that out. And it has co-op, too, in the demo version. So
I haven't gotten to check that out yet. I was playing it, and then Nick rang me on Skype, pulling me out of my fairy tale fantasy.
So I've also been playing Tiger Woods PGA Tour 10. I kind of picked it up on a whim. And the one thing I was thinking about with those games is, so like you said, like, I think we both picked up 09 last year as well. Yep. I don't understand why they don't let you bring your golfer from year to year. It's like, I created this guy last year. Why do I have to go through and build up all his skills and stuff again? Just let me, you know, play at the pro level through these things right from the get-go.
You know, you could co-op that game.
Yeah.
You play best ball.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah. Play teams, play best ball. You could co-op it.
Yeah.
It's relevant. The only thing I don't like about this year's is that the evolving stats that it gives you seem more punishing than last year's model, so.
Yeah, like if you're doing bad, they drop quite a bit and stuff.
Well, I was playing a course in the wind, and it was, you know, chopping the ball left and right, and it was making my drives all really short, so I lost like a full point on my power stat because I wasn't driving as far, but it was the wind, man. It wasn't me.
Yeah. Sun got in my eyes.
Yeah, I know.
I've also fired up Prototype for the 360, and I just can't get into it. It's funny because, like, you know, I said before about Infamous, how it's like, oh, you know, it's okay. Can't really get into it for long stretches, but like, Prototype, when compared to Infamous, it's even like more stale. Like, it just feels very uninspired, and I don't know. Like, I just, meh.
I don't think we're the target audience for Prototype, sir.
Maybe not.
It seems pretty much designed entirely for 15-year-old boys.
Could be. So, and then finally, I've been playing Sins of the Solar Empire, which I really suck at. I try so hard, but I have yet to complete an actual mission in the game.
And as I was telling you, I would have put that in my Whatcha Been Playing segment, but I actually broke the tutorial and haven't played it since, so I'll have to eventually learn how to play it for co-op night, but I think you and I both suck at it in completely different ways.
Yeah, I got some. I posted something on Twitter today when I had like a 4-hour game going, like that I had saved, and finally the computer just was like, you know what, I'm going to annihilate you, and it did. So I posted my frustrations on Twitter, and some people gave me some tips. So I'm going to dig back into that maybe tonight and see if
were,
I can.
Were the tips set it on easy?
No, you know, they said to actually concentrate on your economy real early, instead of trying to build out your guys, and then it helps you later on. So, because what I learned today is that there's the two, well, the three resources. There's metal and there's crystals, and then there's also gold that you get, but there's a whole space economy going on, and like if there's demand for metal, you can sell the metal high or buy it low, kind of a thing. So to kind of like balance out what you need to build stuff. And if you like, if you need like a lot of crystals and you spam buying it, like the price goes up every time you buy it, and and it actually says like, oh, there's a booming economy on crystal or whatever. And so like you can get ripped off if you need stuff in a flash that way. So it's kind of interesting. And it'd be really cool with, you know, if you have multiple people playing, because then there's kind of the give and take.
Yeah, the thing about games like that, and I love them, but I don't ever have the time for them anymore, is that, you know, decisions made early on can pay off huge way down the line.
Yeah.
And you'll often have a lot of people that seem to be pretty much neck and neck with each other, and then all of a sudden someone will pull ahead because they made a, you know, seemingly unimportant investment early on that just really, really gave him an advantage later on. And I wish I had the time to play 4 to 6 hour, you know, sessions of that, because that game does take that long.
Yeah,
according
I mean,
to most of my friends who play it.
Yeah, my 4-hour session was, I think, was over 3 days. So
yeah.
But anyway, that's good stuff. We have that co-op night. If you're listening to this on Tuesday, it's tonight. So come join us and play and show me how to not suck, please.
Or just beat us into submission. It's okay.
So moving on, let's talk about the news in this week in co-op. We've had some pretty good stuff the past couple weeks. First up, Serious Sam HD was announced for the Xbox Live Arcade and the PC. If you never played the original Serious Sam, it's kind of... it was considered back in the day like the new Doom, because it was just mindless, crazy, over-the-top action.
It was basically like a Doom clone shooter mixed with Duke 3D's attitude.
Yeah.
And just enormous levels and huge waves of enemies.
Yeah. So the new one is going to be in the new Serious Engine 3.0. It's basically the first game remade in the new engine, and then released. I think the price was given at $15 or $20 for both Xbox Live Arcade and PC. 4-player co-op. I think the first one had 4-player co-op, but the second one had like 16-player co-op, which was like insane.
All you need to know is that the final boss of the first game is probably the biggest boss I've ever faced in any game ever. It's
except
huge.
For Earth Defense Force.
I guess Earth Defense Force might come close, but you know, Serious Sam gave the scale.
Yeah.
A whole new meaning. Like, you're fighting a dude inside the Great Pyramid of Giza.
So, I'm looking forward to that for sure. Moving on, we heard from Ruffian Studios, who's developing Crackdown 2.
Yay.
Yes, indeed. That half of the original Crackdown team is actually working on Crackdown 2. So, that's good to know that, you know, a good amount of influence from the original should be seen in the second. We've learned that it's going to be set in the same city, but it's going to be evolved quite a bit. They said that they defined the city as one of the key characters to the first game, and that you know, they wanted to kind of keep that.
They wanted to keep the racist stereotypes in full effect.
I guess so. Yeah. Wasn't like one of the accents off? Weren't like the Volk, weren't
all
they
the
like
Russian dudes?
Yeah, didn't they have like a southern twang or something?
No, it was the Shigen, the Chinese guys were all like white people. It was kind of weird.
Yeah, something was off. But anyway, so that's good to know that our Crackdown 2 experience should be with a good base of the original team there.
Well, unless the half of the team they brought over was QA.
Yeah.
In which case, who knows what's going to happen.
I know they did say that. A lot of them that they did mention was like the artists and stuff.
Well, that's good.
So, moving on. I got to see some Halo 3 ODST campaign.
Kat wants to kill you now, you know that, right?
I know, she was kind of upset when she heard that, but I'll tell you what, I couldn't believe that the game's running on the Halo 3 engine, because it is looking really, really gorgeous. Real big, large, expansive environments, billowing smoke effects and stuff like that. So they showed off, basically, so the game starts right from the drop, and you get knocked out midway through the drop because of the incident at New Mombasa. And you wake up and you're kind of like trying to figure out where to go. And they said a big part of what's going to happen is like the city AI is going to kind of direct you. It'll put up things like, it'll put up things on signs. It'll say, you know, like watch out ahead or go left ahead and stuff. But you don't have to. It's actually completely open for the most part.
Mm-hmm.
So you can kind of go anywhere you want. And you'll come across like these little pieces or artifacts, and these artifacts trigger flashback sequences to the other ODSTs that went in the drop, to something they did and something that happened with them. And they described that these like flashback sequences are going to be like the high action part of the game. Like they're like the traditional big Halo battle kind of sequences that have made the series pretty popular. While the main part of the game, when you're in your role, is a little more tactical and slow-moving, stuff like that. So I was pretty impressed with what I saw. The visor plays a big role in it. It'll kind of highlight enemies, kind of like Ghost Recon-ish. You know, how it kind of like gives the outline of like the enemies and stuff. And
right.
Weapons and stuff like that. So it looks to be shaping up pretty nicely. I was kind of disappointed they wouldn't let us play it, but they only had it on one station there, and they just kind of wanted to show it as much as they could.
Right. So. You know, it looks really cool, and I think that the open worldy, you know, flashback setting is pretty awesome. But I do have to question one thing about the Halo mythos. You know, remember when Halo 2 came out, they're talking about how, you know, well, we fought them on the Halo, and now they've come to Earth.
Uh-huh.
And then you go to New Mombasa.
Uh-huh.
Okay, without Google, can you tell me where Mombasa is?
Africa.
Can you be more specific?
Western Africa? No, I mean Eastern Africa.
It's in Kenya. But, you know, when I want to defend Earth, I want something I can, you know, relate to.
You don't like, want to go on a safari?
You don't
safari.
Have to set it in, you know, Seattle or something, but... What about, you know, Canada, or Finland, or Antarctica? It's like, most people don't know, you know, anything about Africa. I don't know.
Yeah.
It just seemed an odd choice of city to me.
Oh, no, that makes sense. So we'll see. But the big thing out of that was, and this was something that, you know, it was said a while ago, but it kind of seemed to have got dropped off in that the main campaign is completely co-opable. Which is good, because we kept hearing about firefight mode, but we haven't kind of been reassured that the full game was co-op, so that is good news.
Yes, very good.
Moving on, a game that doesn't have a campaign co-op mode is Modern Warfare 2. And not only does it not have a campaign co-op mode, it has a two-player Special Forces mode, and that is it. And some people were a little angry about that. Jim, excuse me.
Cough, cough.
But, yeah, I mean, it's kind of disappointing. They had to do the PR spin, unfortunately, and be like, oh, you know, we tried four-player, six-player, and it just didn't work.
When they said two is the magic number for co-op, I nearly spat out my drink.
Yeah. I think Chris Palladino, who used to work for the Gamerscore blog, had a interesting tweet about it. He basically said, I must have missed the vote when 2 was the magic number for co-op.
I'm going to say, pretty much any MMO out there says hi.
Yeah, so that's, I mean, it's disappointing. Not that, you know, I've had probably the most fun I've had in co-op in two-player co-op games. But still, in this day and age, we've seen so many solid things come from four-player co-op experiences. And especially since it's not through the campaign.
Yeah, if it's not really story-based, I don't see the need to restrict it to two. Like,
maybe exactly.
Like, all the games that are really good with two players tend to be really heavy on story.
Right, like Gears of War comes to mind immediately.
Yeah, Gears of War, to a lesser extent, something like Too Human, even though that should have had more.
Yeah.
You know, that the way they built those levels out, some of them would have gotten real crowded with only two, more than two. I don't know.
I guess we'll see. I'll reserve judgment because, Infinity Ward does make quality stuff. What they did with the multiplayer in Call of Duty 4 was pretty revolutionary, and now pretty much every game wants to mimic that, the whole progression system. So maybe we're going to see something similar in that, where they throw some other unique things into the co-op mode.
Just as long as four-player co-op isn't an unlock.
Yeah, oh jeez.
I'm sure Modern Warfare 2 will be plenty fine, even if the co-op isn't so great.
Right. Well, that's what I had said to Jim. Was like, we're the customers, and we have the right to complain, and we do. And I said, well, you're not going to buy it then, right? He's like, well, no, I'm going to buy it still.
It's called voting with your wallet.
Yeah.
If you don't buy it.
So, but I mean, that's the point. It's that. We are still going to buy it, but the only way to make our voices heard, I guess, is to complain. So we'll see what happens. Maybe they'll change their tune. I doubt it. It's kind of getting pretty close to release here. Moving on, there was an interesting article that went up on, I think it was Shaq News, where they got a hold of a survey from Electronic Arts, and it was asking about Command & Conquer 4. And it mentioned that Command & Conquer 4 was going to have a co-op elements as well as RPG style progression through the campaign, and that whole concept's pretty interesting, because we just saw it in Dawn of War 2, where it's basically the same thing.
Where it was basically the best game ever.
Yeah, I mean, we both really really enjoyed that game. So, and I know for me personally, the big thing was customizing my guys. Leveling them up, defining them in their roles and stuff. One of my all-time favorite real-time strategy games was from Bungie called Myth.
Yes.
And Myth was awesome because you could name your characters in, the first mission, and, they would level up, and you'd bring them along, and it was, always cool to, see them, towards the end of the game, you'd still have those guys with you, and, it just added so much to the experience to do that. So, I hope it's something similar along those lines.
Yeah, I'm just hoping that the co-op is a little more forgiving than last time, where one player could essentially become a cursor and do nothing.
Yeah.
If you weren't able to take care of each other. Dawn of War handled it perfectly in making it so your units didn't die unless everybody was dead. Otherwise, you could, stimpack each other back up.
Yeah, I mean, when we played Red Alert, there's a couple times where, either me or you were basically okay, I'm screwed, I can't do anything.
Yeah.
And, we'd have,
and the level and would
stuff.
Keep going.
Yeah, it just it didn't work. So, moving on. Something that kind of came out of the blue of E3 was a new beat-em-up mode in Tekken 6, which I guess it's... The previous games had kind of a arcade-style mode to it.
They've had a mode called Tekken Force in a lot of the games since the PS2 era, which is basically you beat up a bunch of goons with, one of the characters.
Yeah, but I guess this game, this mode is actually a little bit more in-depth. There's supposed to be a little bit of a story with it. It's actually kind of side-scrolling 3D thing, and it's with two characters at the same time, and if you don't have another player with you, the AI actually assumes the role.
Mm-hmm.
And it looked pretty fun. There was actually weapon pickups and stuff you can get. There were some big boss kind of things going on, and they said basically so it plays a beat 'em up as you're going through the levels and stuff, and then you can kind of lock into a mode where the controls switch to more traditional fighting, as if you were doing the one-on-one match in Tekken. Mm-hmm. So. It's kind of interesting, because then you have the quickness of the beat 'em up, but you also have the depth of the fighter.
So, yeah, that's pretty cool.
So that sounds interesting. That's an actually an online mode in Tekken 6 when that comes out this fall. So I'm looking forward to that. Interesting story that Jim dug up with Call of Duty World at War and all these zombie maps that are coming out is that there appears to actually be this underlying story that's going on through it. And if you've played the latest map, the four characters are actually four very different characters in it, and they have a lot more personality than they had in the first one. And they're each from different campaigns. Like there's one from the Japanese campaign, one from the Russian campaign. There's an American and a British guy. And apparently these people that have been playing it have found all these clues within the writing on the wall and some pictures and stuff of this whole story going on with like the Nazis somehow being responsible for all these zombies and stuff. And it's just pretty interesting that, Treyarch is taking the time to kind of put this thing in there. And it kind of hints at another map pack coming probably with another zombie map. Which brings me back to the point that I make every time we talk about this. I still think the zombie mode should have been a standalone like arcade title.
I would buy that. I believe I've said that before.
Indeed. So anyway, that was a good find by Jim. I really enjoyed reading some of the people's theories on the forums and stuff. You know how people on the internet go a little crazy with the stuff.
Oh, yeah.
And finally, just wanted to leave with a quick one that I almost wanted to purchase, but realized that it's probably not going to be worth it, is that there is a Diablo 3 statue of the Barbarian. I think it was an 18-inch one. One of those resin statues that's just all kinds of awesome.
It's beautiful.
It is. It's really cool. And it's also $300.
But it's beautiful.
So
it's made by, I think it's made by Sideshow, right?
Yeah.
Same guys that put together all the World of Warcraft ones recently, and I think they also did. Or was it Weta that put together the really awesome Halo one?
Yeah.
Those all look really great, and you know, if you are a gamer with a lot of money to blow, you know, they look very good on your mantle.
Yeah,
I would suggest putting it next to the cat helmet.
but definitely hit up the site and check it out because it's so pretty. I was like, oh, I was so tempted. But anyway,
do a review of one. See if you could get a demo unit.
How do you review a statue?
This statue is awesome. I wish it was a little more interactive, but the graphics are great. I don't know.
I leveled up my statue today. It is now a level 2 statue.
It's level 2 because I shined a pin spot on it.
Alright, so let's take a short break here. When we come back, we're going to have our soapbox, a quick review of Gunstar Heroes, and some other stuff. And we're going to have a little brief talk about demos. And demos are a great thing when used properly. And there was a time when demos used to come on CDs. And you used to buy magazines for CDs.
there used to be a time when we had a wonderful thing called shareware.
Yeah. Doom was one of the originals there, and I guess even Wolfenstein had a shareware version.
The Quake shareware is the most legendary one. Do you recall why?
No, I don't.
The Quake shareware disc that you could pick up for, you know, $5 or whatever, had the first entire episode of Quake. But it also contained demos for every other id game. Yeah. Well, someone released a file called Qcrack, which if you copied it into a directory and then ran stuff off the Quake CD, unlocked all of the games completely.
Not that you would do that, Mike.
I would never do such a thing. I actually owned all those games by the time Quake came out.
Yeah.
But it was just really convenient to have a CD backup of everything, you know?
Yeah. So anyway, so playing the Trine demo got me thinking about how well a demo can sell a game. I literally, the second I closed the Trine demo, I went into Steam and I pre-ordered the game.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I was interested in the game. I was like, well, I think I might just wait for the Xbox Live Arcade version, which was rumored to come out this fall. Or, you know, I wasn't in any big rush to get it. But the demo, I was like, okay, I need to play this as soon as I can.
Yes.
So the really nice thing about the demo was that it had co-op. But then there's some cases, and you had brought this up, where, like, the demos weren't really accurate of what the full game was like. And the example you used was Resident Evil 5.
Correct. Because you and I were both incredibly down on that game after the demo came out.
Right, yeah. I mean, they even included co-op in it and stuff, but we were just kind of like, something doesn't feel right here.
For me, it was just the I've done this before feeling of it, where, you know, they used high pitch moments that were pretty much direct analogs of moments from Resident Evil 4.
Uh-huh.
And since a lot of the pre-release discussion of Resident Evil 5 was about how, oh, it's just Resident Evil 4.5 or Resident Evil 4 HD or whatever, you know, when they released these sequences that felt pretty much exactly like events that happened in 4, the negative press kind of, you know, reinforced that feeling of, why do I need this game? So, but yeah. Then it came out, we gave it a chance, and it ended up being much better than the demo, so.
Yeah. Yeah, you know, off the top of my head, I can't really think of a bunch of games that kind of failed at it. But I can recall playing demos where, like, you beat it, you play through it, you're like, hey, that was pretty decent, and then splash screen's like, play co-op, play, and, you know, the full version, and it's like, well, why, you know, that's such a big selling point for your game, why is it not in the demo? So I don't know if it's a limitation, maybe it's a time thing with them, you know, I mean, like with any game development thing, it's always seems to be a time versus payoff. Well, with that.
I think a lot of it has to do with when the demo is actually released, because if a demo comes out right before the game comes out, like a couple weeks, you can pretty much figure that their net code is stable.
Yeah.
But, you know, sometimes they put demos for games out a few months in advance when maybe their network code isn't working. You know, there might actually be good reasons why the multiplayer or the co-op isn't in the demo, but
I mean, the biggest ones I can think about are all the Xbox Live Arcade games. A lot of them have co-op, but when you download the demo version, which is the full version of the game, just locked,
right?
You can't actually play co-op in it. You can't play it online or whatever, for whatever reason.
Well, and so that
they can't really use the time excuse. It's like, why wouldn't you want to show off this co-op aspect to get us to buy your game?
Well, I'm pretty sure with the Xbox stuff, that the reason the co-op won't be enabled in games like that is because you can't play online multiplayer without a gold account. So the demo may not be able to differentiate between what type of account you have, and they just don't want to deal with it.
I wonder how they're going to do it for like something like the upcoming Battlefield 1943, where it's a multiplayer game.
Well, they could do the thing they've been doing lately where they only release a demo to gold members or something.
Right. And I think that is how it is right now, is gold members get a week ahead of time.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe it's not that way for the arcade games. That'd be kind of silly. I think it might just be the demos.
I think sometimes they actually make the demo only available to gold members.
Right. So anyway, you know, it's just something that, like I said, Trine did it really well. I absolutely can't wait for the game. Hopefully, next 2 weeks here, we'll be getting our hands on that to play.
Yeah, it took me about 30 seconds of playtime before I realized that I needed to own that game.
Yeah, like, the second I completed the intro, after it introduced the three characters, I was like, I want it.
Yeah.
I was like, I want it.
I want it, I need to have it, thank you.
Yeah, it was just It was that good, so.
So I guess this is not so much about co-op demos and demos in general as you fools need to download the Trine demo.
Exactly.
And
why are you listening to us when you could be playing the Trine demo?
why are you listening to this podcast? You should be playing Trine.
All right. Very good. Let's move on to our impression / review of Gunstar Heroes, or Nick's sad display of skill in Gunstar Heroes.
That was... I must admit, I expected a little bit more out of you.
I expected... You know, honestly, that was probably the first time that I played the game again since I had a Genesis.
Yeah.
12, 14 years ago, whatever it was.
Excuses. And even then... Excuses. I had loaded up that demo, or loaded up that game... for the first time, right before I asked you to play co-op with me. And it had been quite a while since I'd played it, too, so.
But, yeah, I mean, for $5, it's a pretty faithful emulation of it, I guess, what you can say. And the online play was nice and smooth.
Yeah.
I guess if you guys have never played Gunstar Heroes, basically... it's kind of like Contra, except you actually have health.
And you can kung fu kick and throw people.
Right. And the coolest thing I've always liked about it is how the weapon system works and how you can, like, kind of combine the powers of the weapons, depending on what you have.
Yeah, you can toggle between, like, the auto-aim shot or a flamethrower, or you can set them both to work together so you have... fireballs that go seeking enemies.
Right, yeah, it's cool.
And there's lots of big bosses, and the levels are really original.
Yeah, so there's only 4 levels, but they're, like, vastly different. Like, the first one's just kind of like your typical side-scroller, nothing too out of the ordinary, except, I guess, maybe the pyramid climb and slide at the end.
And the 3D boss. You know, the guy first... that's made out of the cubes, that's actually 3D.
Yeah. Okay, so yeah, that's pretty different, I guess. And then there's a level where it's all vertical, like you're on like a rocket ship going up. So that one was pretty cool. And then the one we did is like you're on a little...
minecart.
Yeah. And I don't even remember the 4th level.
It's the game, or the board game, where you do little segments and you fight mini-bosses, and then it sends you to a room to roll the dice.
Right.
And, you know... you can roll anything between 1 and 6, and it determines your path through the level. But if you're really, really good, you can sit there and juggle the die until it falls on the 6, so you play through the level in, like, 3 rolls. Yeah, it's old school, but it's so much fun. And if you like a Contra-style shooter, this is pretty much the best... I would hesitate to call it a Contra clone, because it really isn't, but that style of shooter... personally, I don't think there's ever been a game that matched it since, in terms of just a fun, pure shooter. And, you know, even when you play it on the hardest difficulty, it's manageable. It's not like what Contra has become, which is the rote memorization of enemy patterns and whatnot. You know, Gunstar Heroes lets you be a little more experimental with how you tackle things. And
yeah, well, it's forgiving because it's not one error and you're done.
Right.
You know, if you error, you lose some health, and then you can, you know, adjust.
So. And you can still get technically one-hit deaths where, you know, Nick was especially good at getting caught behind a boss and then just bounced all around for, you know, all of his health bar. So, you know, you can still eat cheap deaths, but...
glitches, I tell you, glitches.
Glitches, sure. But it's completely fantastic. The emulation technology's done really well. And for $5, it's a steal. The only thing that really cheesed me off about it is that it's put together by the same people that did the Sonic's Ultimate Genesis Collection. Uh-huh. So why that wasn't included in that collection is beyond me. Because it's pretty much the best Genesis game.
Yeah, especially because all the other games that came out with Gunstar Heroes, they had
were the vintage... on that disc, yeah.
Exactly, yeah. So
it was an odd oversight, but I will forgive them because that game had 50 games on it.
Yeah. Yeah, so I give it a thumbs up for sure. Definitely worth the $5. And I think both local and online co-op with it, which is good stuff.
I give it 11 thumbs up because it's still my favorite shooter.
Very good. So let's start to wrap things up here. We'll go over some upcoming co-op releases. There's just a couple confirmed ones. Things have been getting juggled around all summer, especially with the arcade titles and stuff like that. But one of the ones, we don't know the exact date, but should be by the time the next podcast goes up, we should have Trine on the PC and on the PlayStation Network. So that'll be good. We also have the North American release of Arma 2. I actually played the demo for that this weekend, and it is... it's good, I guess. It definitely reminds me of Operation Flashpoint.
Yeah, it's...
But it is a system hog and a half. My God.
I should check that out on my system.
Yeah, I'd be curious to see how well it runs on a decent computer, which I will have one soon.
In a 32-pound box.
So, yeah. Also coming up, we have the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, Turtles in Time Reshelled for Xbox Live Arcade. That is coming out on the 20th, which actually will be after the next podcast, so I fail.
Oh, have they released pricing on that, by the way?
They haven't released pricing, I don't think, no.
Because the 89 arcade one was $5 and...
Well, remember what? This is the, it's completely redone in 3D.
I know, but it's still Turtles in Time.
Well, it's Ubisoft, so what did they charge for the Prince of Persia?
$10.
$10, so yeah. I guess it's going to be $10.
Curses.
So yeah, other than that, co-op is pretty sparse the next couple weeks, unless we have, a lot of times these surprise games pop up on Xbox Live Arcade we've never even heard of, and they offer some sort of co-op mode. There was Gel Set and Match, I think was the name of it.
Yeah.
And it was by the guys that did the Small Arms game on Xbox Live Arcade, which was kind of like a Smash Brothers clone. But the Gel Set and Match game was like a real-time puzzle game, is the best way to describe it. But you controlled a character on the screen that manipulated the environment that was like a puzzle game. It was kind of interesting, but it had co-op puzzles in it, so that kind of came out of nowhere.
Cool. Well, all I know is that Trine should keep you occupied for a little bit.
Yes. Want Trine now.
Please. Want to buy. I want to give you money.
We're just going to call this Co-op the Cast episode 22, Trine.
No, episode 22, buy Trine.
Buy Trine.
Buy Trine now. Pre-order. Okay.
Some of the site stuff you may or may not have missed. We had a review of Ghostbusters for the 360 and PlayStation 3, and we also had the review of Ghostbusters for the Wii. We also had a review of EA Sports Active for the Wii, which I guess has some co-op exercises in it.
I can think of a co-op exercise,
yeah,
too.
I know, my mind went right to the gutter with it, too. Especially since it comes with some kind of elastic band thing. I mean, come on.
Okay, let's get off this subject.
We had some features. We did our Beyond Co-op reviews for the month, which we covered Prototype, Infamous, Plants vs. Zombies, Knights in the Nightmare, Bionic Commando, and Indiana Jones and the Staff of the Kings. So check that out. We also posted up some coverage for the Microsoft preview event, which I went through some of the material for it, and apparently that was like their holiday preview of stuff that's going to be out this holiday, which is like 6 months away.
Ever heard of Christmas in July?
I guess so.
Yeah.
Jim had a Battlefield report where he talked about guns in games, and specifically Rainbow Six Vegas 2 and some of the configurations and stuff in there. That was actually a pretty interesting read.
Mm-hmm.
And Mark had a co-op classics up for what you just mentioned, Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, the 1989 arcade game.
Also known as the game that stole my youth.
If you're listening to us from iTunes, please leave us feedback. We love our feedback. Give us a rating. We prefer the 5-star kind. You can follow us on Twitter. We are Co-Optimus with no dash. And we gave some Uncharted 2 beta codes away on there.
We gave an awful lot of Uncharted 2 beta codes away.
Yeah, we had more codes than I knew what to do with. I was pretty sick of going in that spreadsheet and editing it by the time we were done sending them all out. So, but this has been Co-Opticast episode 22. Thanks for listening.